Hello, and welcome to Harp Column Podcast, taking you behind the stories in Harp Column from a practical harpist's perspective. My name is Christina Finch, and I will be your guide to all things harp. Music for today's episode comes from Anne Hobson Pilot's recording of the Matthias and Hinastera Concertos with the English Chamber Orchestra, released in 2003. Episode 33 features the author of the January-February 2018 Sounding Board article, Angelica Hairston. It was almost exactly a year ago that we first heard from Angelica on this podcast. In that episode, we covered her amazing work with the Urban Youth Harp Ensemble of Atlanta, Georgia, the impact that summer camps can have on students, and we briefly covered today's topic, Angelica's activism initiative, Challenge the Stats, a project aimed to celebrate artists of color and shed light on the vast underrepresentation of minorities in the performing arts. I thought it would be useful for everyone if Angelica gave us a brief history of the project and its inception.
So I actually started playing the harp in sixth grade, and I studied with Monica Hargrave, who is actually an African-American harpist in the city of Atlanta. And through studying with her, a couple years later, I got into the talent development program. And that program is through the Atlanta Symphony, and I studied with Elizabeth Remy, and they provide just support and lessons and actually helped me buy my instrument. Lots of different opportunities for African-American and Latino students who are interested in classical music as a career. And I think that was very unique for me, especially as a woman of color in the arts, having a surrounding community of other students who looked like me, which is very, very rare for a lot of people who are studying and who are young. So coming through that program, I looked at lots of different schools and ended up settling for my undergrad with Judy Lohman in Toronto at the Royal Conservatory. And while I was there, I had a blast. I loved my time. I loved Judy. It was very cold, but I loved my time. And while I was there, 12 was the death of Trayvon Martin. And the year later was the acquittal of George Zimmerman. And a few years later, we saw Michael Brown. And there were so many issues of police brutality coming to the surface in the United States. I was in a practice room practicing my harp and, you know, perfecting my Renier. And it was wonderful. I loved what I was doing, but I also was looking around at the world and saying, what in the world is going on? And what am I doing as an artist to actually make a change to all of these really horrifying narratives that we're seeing in mainstream media all across the country? Towards the end of my time at the Royal Conservatory, I really started to think, well, what would it look like for me to do something with this training in order to really make an impact? So I started looking for programs that were a little bit more business focused for my master's and ended up settling on Northeastern University, where I was an MLK fellow. And during my time there, I was able to really study nonprofits serving communities of color, which was really cool. I'm total nerd. I love statistics and data. And so I really just dove into all of that and ate it up. Towards sort of the middle of my time there, I met an amazing mentor. Her name is Margot Saulnier. She used to work for the Boston Pops. And I remember sitting with her and sort of sharing my interests in just sort of changing the narrative around marginalized communities and just making an impact through the arts. And she said, well, let's do something with all of this research. Let's actually take an action step and do something that makes a difference. So that's sort of how Challenge the Stats was born, in a coffee shop in Boston. And, you know, the first concert, it was so incredible. I could not have expected the amazing support that we got from the NAACP and the African American History Museum in Boston. And I involved Mason Morton and Charles Overton. And we performed a piece by Maurice Strawn, as well as some other arrangements of spirituals. And I just had the most incredible time. And I think the one thing that really impacted me the most about that concert was looking at the audience and seeing what kind of people were drawn to this sort of event, people who loved classical music and came for the classical music, people who came because they saw representation that they had never seen before, a lot of families who were bringing their children who could look up on stage and see older people who looked like them doing something that they had never seen before. I mean, it just really crossed the gamut. And many people who were coming up to me at the end and saying, what kind of style was that girl singing? It was so amazing. And I said, it was opera. That's what opera is. And they went to opera, you know, performances and concerts after that. And so that really sort of lit a fire in me to sort of continue this work. So now Challenge the Stats is becoming an initiative. And it's really a space where we're continuing to present concerts as well as having conversation. And so really bringing social justice into the concert hall and talking about what it looks like for artists to advocate and what it looks like to be authentic in that form of musical advocacy.
Angelica is one of those people that makes you want to do better, to be better, whenever you hear her speak. She lights a fire inside my brain whenever we talk, often leaving me stumble to formulate my next question. Although this episode primarily focuses on Angelica's Challenge the Stats project, which will present its 2018 program on February 24th in Atlanta, Georgia, I couldn't pass up an opportunity to talk to her about her work with the Urban Youth Harp Ensemble, a middle and high school-based harp program serving over 80 students in the Atlanta area. How many kids are you working with on a daily basis?
So in total, we teach together 86 students. So that's both middle and high school and after school and every other time on the weekend and everywhere. But 86 in total, and about, I'd say about 30 of those are in high school, which is what I primarily teach.
That is insanity. I have like six students and I can't remember their names.
I know. The really cool thing about it is that every single class is so different from one another that you never know what's going to happen. So I have sort of an honors class that they come in and you ask them to do one thing and they're just like on it. And I have another class that has beginners and some students with learning disabilities. And so that class, I'm sort of running from here to there and doing this and that and wearing all my different hats. Then I have another class where they're just silly. I mean, they are just straight out silly. And it's at the end of the day. So by the time they come, I'm exhausted, but we always have such a good time. So it's nice to have sort of different groups of kids learning at totally different levels and still everybody enjoying it. We're always thinking of new innovative ways to sort of support composers. And so this year we're working on an amazing project where we're collaborating with a group called Full Radius. And it's a dance company that has dancers who some are physically disabled and some are not. Those conversations about physical disability and helping our students develop vocabulary and conversation skills about physical disability has been a big focus of this year. And working with that group, we've been working with Maurice Strawn, who is actually writing a new piece for a harp ensemble for this collaboration, which has been a complete blast. And we've been able to Skype with him and bring him into the classroom through video chat in order to work on the piece. We've played for him and even had just Q&As about what it's like to be a male Black harpist in our world, and even his story of advocacy and his story of really making a change in classical music through the music that he is writing. So that has been an amazing project, and I'm really excited to see sort of where that goes. And we'll also be playing one of the movements of that piece at Challenge the Stats in February.
Thanks for the segue, Angelica. Back to Challenge the Stats. A few interesting facts for the skeptical listener. Only 4.1% of orchestral musicians are Black or Hispanic. African Americans make up less than 4% of opera audiences. Less than 1% of compositions performed by U.S. orchestras are by composers of color. Angelica is doing her part to change that. I asked her to tell us a little bit about her upcoming concert.
So on the 24th of February, Challenge the Stats is going to be at First Presbyterian Church, and it's right in downtown city of Atlanta. And what's been really cool about this particular concert that was different from the ones that we've done in the past is that we're hosting a sort of panel dinner and discussion. And this is a way that we are increasing this idea of inclusion and this idea of equity.
Inclusion and equity. Inclusion and equity. Okay, let's get a useful analogy here so we can all be on the same page.
I think a lot of times in our field, we focus a lot on the idea of just diversity, which is great. It's really, really important. There are so many other things that we have to think about when we want to not only be diverse, but also inclusive and also equitable in the arts. So if we were all playing Monopoly, one of my favorite games, Monopoly can go on for millions of hours, but we decide instead of waiting for everyone to come in the room to start playing Monopoly, we'll just start without people. Some people are gaining property. Some people are running the banks. Some people are, you know, running an entire street of houses. They have multiple houses on a property. And then other people walk into our party who weren't at the game at the beginning, and we say, well, you can start playing with us right now. That's impossible in Monopoly. To create equity when people have not started at the same starting point. And I think when we think about diversity, we have to also think about not only having a mix of people, but also making sure everyone has a seat at the table and making sure everyone has an equal starting point.
Where were we? Before the concert on February 24th, there is a panel dinner and discussion.
So everybody's got to eat, right? That's a great way to connect and enjoy one another. So we're going to host a dinner. They'll come, they'll eat, they'll sit at a table, they'll have leading questions, and we'll talk about things that are, you know, in our world right now, social justice issues. We'll talk about issues of mass incarceration, which is connected very closely to the commission that we're working on for the concert. We will have a panel of arts leaders who, some are from El Sistema programs, so talking about arts education, talking about school to prison pipeline. It's very, very simple to be able to make those connections happen. And one great way to do it is by food, and also just by putting different people at a table together. Thinking about different ways to have people feel that it's a safe space is something that I've really been thinking about going forward and in programming concerts. On the 24th, concert goers can expect lots of different pieces that they've probably never heard before. So we'll have a premiere of the piece by Maurice Drahn for Urban Youth, as well as inviting some of those students to be part of that event. We'll also have the piece by Joel Thompson, which will be for harp and tenor, focused around the issues of mass incarceration. We'll be performing a piece by William Grant Still, who is known as sort of the dean of African-American composers, his Summerland, which is really beautifully set for harp and violin. We'll also have a flutist who is flying in and performing the works of living female composers. We'll have dancers. We also have a cello sextet that's performing. So there's going to be a lot going on, but I think it'll be a really wonderful experience. And I think it'll be a time for us not only to enjoy performing, but also really learn a lot. This concert, we are celebrating the work of course, the Urban Youth Harp Ensemble, which serves about 86 students in the Atlanta Public School District, both in school and after school. We'll also be working with the Atlanta Music Project, which is an El Sistema program in the city, serving both string players, vocalists, and some woodwind players as well. The Atlanta Symphony Orchestra's Talent Development Program, which is a program that I graduated from, and quite a few other of the artists on the program are alums of that program, as well as working with Casa de la Cultura, a program that primarily works with Latino students who are in the north area of the city of Atlanta.
Putting on one of these concerts is not a small feat.
No.
Do you have help? Like, are you doing all of this on your own?
This year, doing Challenge the Stats, I have learned how to delegate a lot better than I have in the past. And I think that's one thing, especially as harpists, I think we develop a very strong sense of independence. So we have to know our own parts and do our own thing and move our own harp. But learning to sort of release and have other people help me through this process has been really great. So having mentors, both who are in Boston and some who are in the city, who are really helping me in that process, having help in marketing and having help just in planning and in setting different things, because I have a team who is there and who is helping me through that process. So I think even developing that sense of community for myself has been a learning process, but learning to have trust and sort of vulnerability in that process has been really cool.
Ooh, that's hard.
It's real hard. But, you know, I also teach 86 amazing students. And so finding that balance is really critical because I want to be able to pour into them as much as I can and be as on it and with it as I can. And so, you know, Challenge the Stats is an initiative that I do with a team so that I can also really be there for my kids when they need me.
You're listening to Harp Column Podcast, episode number 33. You can read more harp news, feature stories, and subscribe to the print magazine at www.harpcolumn.com. Today's episode is brought to you by Harp Column Academy at harpcolumnacademy.com, an online learning site where you can watch lessons on repertoire and technique taught by master teachers who have taught some of the best harpists in the world. Today's guest, Angelica Hairston, is a contributing teacher for Harp Column Academy, and her studio is full of incredibly useful resources for learning music theory at the harp. Head over to www.harpcolumnacademy.com to learn more about Angelica's studio, along with all the studios of our amazing faculty. At only $49.99 a year, this constantly updating resource is a steal for any harpist looking to up their own playing or give their students a new perspective. Part of her Challenge the Stats program on February 24th will be the world premiere performance of a newly composed work for harp and tenor by Jamaican-American composer Joel Thompson. Every year, the American Harp Society grants thousands of dollars to individual harpists and American Harp Society chapters to fund projects and compositions. This piece is a result of that grant making. I asked Angelica to share a little about the piece with me.
One of my most exciting things that I've been working on is a commission with Joel Thompson. And Joel is an incredible Jamaican-American composer. A couple months ago, I was at a conference by the Sphinx Organization, which is one of the biggest leaders of diversity in the nation. And they premiered the piece called Seven Last Words of the Unarmed. And it's sort of loosely similar to Seven Last Words of Christ. And he takes the seven last words of different victims of police brutality, so Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown, and other males who were affected by police brutality. I remember going to that concert, and I have never felt a stronger sense of community than when that piece was performed. So geographically, this was not my community. And looking around, even ethnically and age demographically, it really wasn't necessarily connected to my normal community. And yet, sitting in a space created this sense of empathy for one another that I had never, ever experienced in my life. And immediately I was like, who is this composer? So I looked him up, and it turns out he's based in Atlanta. And he and I sat down and really thought through what it would look like to write a piece for harp and tenor that would have a very strong hold in social justice issues. And so we settled on a piece that's based on the poetry of inmates in the criminal justice system. And it has been a very vulnerable journey that I have learned a lot on, of setting this text of people who rarely been represented in the classical music field whatsoever, as inmates, as prisoners, and taking this text and giving it life and giving it honesty and vulnerability. And the last movement of this piece is called We Were Kings Once. And it sort of trails the story of an inmate in Michigan right now. He's alive. And he tells his story of when he was the king and he ran his streets in Michigan, and just the pride and dignity of that. And then into his time in prison and how he's failed his people and his subjects and even his nation, and setting that text and even the juxtaposition of the image of harp and being so royal and regal and often connected to this idea of kings and queens has been really cool, very challenging to be authentic and not pretentious in that process. But I really think that we have hit on something. We Were Kings Once, by Charles G. Brooks, Sr. We were kings once, and we wielded our power ruthlessly, invincible as long as our guns were high and the things we did were written across the sky. And our dispensaries were overflowing. We medicated individuals with the balm for their need, cocaine, heroin, ecstasy, cash, or weed. We were kings once, and we never realized that our world was glass. Time were slowly flowing, pushing us into different worlds without us knowing. We were kings once, trapped in a war of circumstances, badgered by bad choices, worse opinions, predetermined fates, boxed in by poverty and dreams and love and hate. We were kings once, and we failed our subjects. We failed our families, our nation, our people, our homes. We were kings once. It has been such a cool process, and I feel very thankful to be able to take these words and break them down. And what's been interesting is there are a number of times when we have to really think about the classical idiom and writing for lines like growing up rough, or there's another poem that details my homeboy bleeding on the pavement. How do you sing that in the classical style with authenticity? So to really approach those issues with uncertainty and just make those decisions as we sort of forge a new path through classical music has been really, really empowering. I'm also thankful to the American Harp Society for supporting that commission through their grant program.
Music and the arts have long been a home for activism throughout history. Whether it be the medieval bard reciting a bawdy poem about the king, the works of Shostakovich in Soviet Russia, or Billie Holiday's recording of the song Strange Fruit protesting American racism, activism has long been a part of our field. It's not a secret that a bulk of our field, generally speaking, comes from a fairly privileged background. One might argue that this privilege also comes with the responsibility of ensuring inclusion and equity in our community for people of all kinds. If this episode has left you questioning your privilege or your role in this, but you don't know where to start, don't worry. Angelica has some great advice for anyone who wishes to expand their view, reach, and impact.
So the League of American Orchestras did a really interesting study on diversity and equity in 2016. And the end results of their finding was that combined, African American and Latino representation is at about 4.2% in orchestras across the country. So only 4.2% of players in nationwide in orchestras are African American and Latino. And those numbers have barely moved in the past 15 years. And so when we look at that, and when we look at the communities that are around us, and we look at the news and the things that are happening around us, we have to make a decision. And so if we want to stay in our cultural bubbles and we want to just play the music that we've always played, and we only want to serve the communities that look very homogeneous, whole world out there that's just not being served by the power of our arts. And the beauty of what we do as musicians is we are able to connect with people on such a deep and beautiful level. And what's cool about advocacy is, you know, I used to think that I had to be out on the picket line and I had to be, you know, out marching in rallies. And that's not true. There are many, many, many ways to advocate. It could be as basic as standing up before a piece on your program that is by, let's see, a woman of color on your program. Stand up and say, why does this piece matter to you? Actually speaking and connecting with your audience. And the power of conversation is so critical. Like talking to your audience even before or after your program and saying why it's important for you to expand the repertoire of harp music. There's so many beautiful things that we can learn from getting out of our comfort zones and getting out of our bubbles. And I just really would encourage everybody just to try, even if it doesn't work and it's a complete disaster. Kim Rowe's father, who said it is more important to do the right thing than to do it right. So worry less about the logistics of how it will come off to people or what people will think about me or what they'll say about me, and just do the right thing and figure it out as you go along. And I bet that people will be very surprised when they start to do things a little bit differently and see a totally different result than they expect. So I think there are a lot of things that we as harpists can do to authentically connect with the people who are around us and the communities that we live in, that we serve. I think a lot of times about three communities: where you live, where you work, and where you play. And so very often those are, you know, different geographic locations, and they serve lots of different people. So even going to the grocery store and looking around and thinking, who are the different people that I see here? And that could be culturally, that could be socioeconomic, that could be gender, that could be sexual orientation, whatever it may be. And I think what's really cool about what we do in the arts is programming. And I think that's a huge point that we as harpists have to really think about and be critical about. So what we're putting on our programs is going to attract certain audiences. So, there's so many amazing pieces that are being written by women. There are amazing pieces that are being written by people of color. There's so many collaborative things that you could do, collaborating with a youth group that's in your area that you may have never talked to before, or thinking about where you're placing your concerts. Geography has a huge part in who is attending. And so with Challenge the Stats, one thing we're very intentional about is placing the concert in an area of the city that's very diverse. So there is a big mix of socioeconomic status. There's a big mix of age and gender, as well as ethnicity. And so finding ways not only to have diversity, but also to have inclusion so that people feel welcome, and also have equity so that everyone is able to attend from the same sort of starting point, and no one feels that classical music is too overwhelming or are way out of their bubble for them to be able to enjoy.
Diversity, inclusion, equity. That's it for our 32nd episode. Many thanks to Angelica Hairston for speaking with us today. Angelica's Challenge the Stats program will be held at the First Presbyterian Church in Atlanta, Georgia, on February 24th, 2018, with a dinner and discussion at 5:30 and a concert at 7. More information about this initiative can be found at www.challengethestats.org. Music for today's episode comes from Anne Hobson Pilot's recording of the Matthias Concertos with the English Chamber Orchestra, released in 2003. Anne Hobson Pilot was the first African-American harpist to be named principal of an American symphony orchestra when she won the Boston Symphony and Boston Pops job in 1980. This and many more of her recordings are available for purchase on iTunes and Amazon Music. Additional music for this episode
came from a recording of Joel Thompson's Seven Last Words of the Unarmed, performed by the University of Michigan's Glee Club. If you're looking for a truly powerful music experience, I suggest Googling this work. A video of the performance that Angelica attended is available to view for free on YouTube. To learn more about Harp Column, please visit www.harpcolumn.com and subscribe today to gain access to current and past issues, as well as a lot of great web content. My name is Dr. Christina Finch, and we at Harp Column hope that you have a spectacular week.